we're going to talk about some specific things, but it certainly can go off in different directions from where we start. First, I'm going to talk a little bit the basis of reform as we've kind of laid it out. And as I say, you're free to change it as you are interested in the subject. Has to do with wilderness, specifically wilderness use right around here and the recreational impact that we as people at Holden have in that wilderness and our feelings about wilderness, whether there's too much wilderness, what is wilderness, whether there's too little wilderness, how do we view the mountains around here, the country around here, whatever. First, I'm going to mention a little bit of the root of the word wilderness. As far as I can tell, the root of the word seems to come from the word will, and sort of indicates a self-will, willful, uncontrollable, sort of a free will type concept. And as in the Old English, door, D-E-O-R, was a prefix that was used to denote wild creatures, not under the control of man. So then the word came wilder, or wild, a wild animal, or wild beast. So wilderness was the dwelling place of wild beasts. In the Old Testament, and certainly throughout the Bible, wilderness often indicates desert, a sort of a specific place of arid, barren place, devoid of much moisture or much use of any type, and which is kind of different than kind of our concept, the American concept, that the wilderness was something to be conquered. It was sort of, the wilderness constantly moved west until now, perhaps not right now, but certainly in recent years you could hear the phrase the last wilderness being used, referred to Alaska. Right around here, the Glacier Peak country and the country around that has been suggested from my sources as early as 1906 was suggested to be a national park. And I'm going to read a little section from an article that appeared in the Wenatchee Daily World on September 18, 1926, about some of the area around here. The Railroad Creek Trail from Lucerne on Lake Chelan is a favorite with hunters and fishermen, and is also generally used by parties whose objective point is Lyman Glacier. It was over this trail that Mary Roberts Reinhardt and her party made their memorable, if not melodramatic, journey to the Glacier Peak country. Following up with probably the best descriptive article in Cosmopolitan magazine that has ever appeared in concerning this part of the Great West. Mrs. Reinhardt, however, was several years late in being the first woman of national importance to discover the Glacier Peak country. Ethel Barrymore, famous actress, established a summer camp on North Star Mountain on the South Fork of the Agnes a number of years before, and returned there for several summers in succession. Old-timers in the country cherish the memory of Miss Barrymore's visit to North Star Mountain and speak of her in loving remembrance. One old prospector who has been going into the country for the past 30 years told the writer of Miss Barrymore's love of the country and promised to lead the way to her former camp, but somehow the trip was never made. 15 miles from Lucerne on the Railroad Creek Trail is Heart Lake, one of the best trout fishing lakes in the West. About 3 miles further on is Lyman Lake, fed directly by waters from Lyman Glacier, which tumble down from the heights above in a series of waterfalls and torrents. The water in Lyman Lake is milk white with glacial silt, and is not considered in the same class with Heart Lake as far as trout fishing goes. Wonderful campsites are available on both these lakes. A point of interest along Railroad Creek is the Holden Mine, about 13 miles from Lucerne, and a little over a mile south of the main trail. Here has been uncovered what promises to be a copper property of considerable importance with intelligent development. Anyway,
what year was that?
1926.
Where did you get it?
A few weeks ago, Stehekin sent us quite a bit of information that they had in their archives. Anyway, the Glacier Peak area was argued for being a national park. Specifically, the area right surrounding a lot of what is now the Glacier Peak Wilderness area was often considered as for a national park. But late in the 50s, and finally in 1960, I'm not sure whether it was 60 or 61, it was declared a wilderness area. It was one of the first wilderness areas declared by Congress in the country. And the wilderness sort of had specific rules. Hunting was allowed in wilderness, fishing was allowed in wilderness, but there could be no logging, no motorized vehicles. And sort of, it was a place to be set aside untrammeled, or at least relatively untrammeled by man. And somewhere, sort of, this, the image was that, let's see. Here's the definition from the Wilderness Act. A wilderness, in contrast with those areas where man and his own works dominate the landscape, is hereby recognized as an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, where man himself is a visitor who does not remain. Anyway, sort of one interesting loophole in the Wilderness Act was that mining and mining claims were allowed for 20 years. So in other words, in the Glacier Peak Wilderness area, mining is still allowed up to 1984. Now, I'm really not sure of the specifics whether a claim, I believe if a claim is started in 1984, it can be continued after that time. And certainly in the mid-60s, there was a big fuss. It's died down somewhat now, although there are still plans of making Kennecott Copper had planned a very large mine with great dimensions on Miner's Ridge between Suiattle Pass and Image Lake. And so that was a point of big controversy, and there were a lot of articles in national publications about that. And that got Image Lake and a lot of the country around there, a lot of national press. So certainly it became kind of one of the most famous wilderness areas in the country. I guess that's basically all I have to say about wilderness.
Okay. I'm present just a kind of a brief history of some of the use of Lyman Lake, the Railroad Creek Valley to there, and some of the plans and restoration and activity that the Forest Service has been doing around there. Most of this information is taken from this book called by the U.S. Forest Service on Recreational Impact on the Wilderness. And also from Ken Dahl's year-end report as Lyman Lake Ranger. The trail to Lyman was built in the early 1900s, used by the miners. During the days of the mine, groups as large as 50 people and 70 horses traveled from Holden to Lyman Lake. One thing I should say about the soil up there at Lyman and right on Lyman is a sandy loam soil, which is very porous and lightweight, has low fertility, and is very susceptible to wind and water erosion, and thus has low water holding capacity also. Okay. After 1960, the horse use declined when the mine was no longer here, but hiker travel has increased dramatically. Hikers gravitated to the already denuded areas around Lyman Lake, denuded by the horses and miners. After the 64 Wilderness Act, tent trenching, horse tethering, and continuous use of fragile sites at Lyman Lake were still considered acceptable. Tables, fireplaces, and willow toilets remain as convenient attractions to users. So, after the Wilderness Act, untrammeled by man was pretty much undefined, and they thought that was okay for a while, so that continued use of those fragile areas right around the lake. In the early 1970s, wilderness rangers around there became concerned about increasing devegetation and erosion of Lyman Lake, and documentation that they've been taking clearly showed continuing loss of plant cover and soil. So in 73, some of the first steps were taken for rehabilitation. This was an action plan of public information, education, and enforcement. Campsites were removed around the lake, and revegetation was started, work was started. Erosion was, and plant loss was worse, was the worst right around the lake, within 60 meters of it. So one thing they did was they put camping, which most people, most of you know, is limited, is prohibited to within 200 feet of the lake, and all tables and fire rings were removed so that people were not encouraged to camp there. Barren areas were treated and fenced with twine and stakes. So for the last 8 years, they've been trying various different revegetation techniques. And around Lyman Lake, it's been fairly successful. The areas, they would transplant plugs of vegetation of some, I, was all technical terms, I didn't know what they meant. And those have done real well. I guess the areas in between where they transplanted plugs have not done as well. They also did revegetation on the Cloudy Pass Trail, and that's been pretty successful with 80 to 90% survival there. So this has been going on for the last 8 years. Then from Ken Dahl's year-end report this year, 79, he talks about some of the things he did up there. He broke up 11 campfire rings that were left by overnight campers that had come through in the Lyman Lake area. Most people camp, I guess, in the forested area, close to the lake, but you know, in the limit, 200 feet away, and I had left campfire rings. Out of 29 overnight groups at Holden that he contacted, 18 of them were from Holden. Holden users form the single largest group of users in the wilderness around Lyman and Cloudy Pass. Also, the largest group coming from the Railroad Creek Valley to Image Lake is from Holden. And Ken also said that he thought that Holden users, he referred to them as the most environmentally unaware wilderness user group that they have coming into Lyman Lake. One more. They have presently 6 major revegetation sites around the Lyman and Cloudy Pass area. Due to the fact that Holden has such a large impact on the Lyman area and Holden is an area that the Forest Service feels they can, is readily accessible to education because we're here and people are using it. They have an outline of some things that some educational things to be presented to Holden. We're in an unusual situation in that with a summer population of 400, we sit within a fourth to a half a mile of a wilderness boundary, and boundaries which are often thought to have a 1 to 2 mile buffer zone from even remote trailheads. So being in Holden is a very unique position. Most wilderness areas are quite a ways from any large population at all. Thus we have a real wilderness area, very accessible and easily available to people that normally probably wouldn't have that available. There are just minimal restrictions, but we all know about probably permits and maximum size of an overnight group of 12 persons. And then Holden has put in some of their own voluntary restrictions of 12 people on the Holden Lake Trail and a quota of 24 people on the Lyman Lake Trail daily. Some other things that the Forest Service, speaking of for Ken only, I guess I should say, would like to encourage is for people to consider possibly not using the wilderness for activities that are not essentially wilderness activities, such as jogging, and a request for both guests and staff to consider trips to the heavily used areas of Holden, Hart, Lyman, and Image Lakes as a privilege and to be taken as occasional special outings rather than frequent ventures that we go on often. Thank you. period.
Jean, one thing that should be clarified is when Ken took those statistics that said that, you know, Holden had so many parties into the wilderness area, he was counting any group that was associated with any Lutheran church as associated with Holden. So if a high school group or a youth group was hiking into the wilderness from so-and-so Lutheran church that weren't even registered here, they were still crediting that as Holden hikers.
I understood that it was all registered guests. No. They were coming to Holden to stay.
No, and I put in a strenuous objection against that practice. Mm-hmm. And not that it did much good, but I think it's a very, very poor way to keep track of statistics.
Okay. Thank you.
What does it mean that Holden people were the most unenvironmentally aware or whatever? Does that mean they did things up there that they checked?
I don't have that clarified. Really, I think that possibly that could be that because we're so close, it's easily accessible to people that maybe would not normally be going into a wilderness and haven't had to maybe learn a lot of the skills in order to get there and taken care of. I don't know.
Yeah, it was also such things as noise, the noise factor. That, in other words, one of the things that you know, allows more people to be in the wilderness is if, you know, people are relatively quiet and enjoy the serenity of the wilderness. Well, according to Ken, and I think that he was right, that a lot of groups that came from Holden, you know, like, were taking days off, it was vacation, a lot of staff, and they were just louder groups in the wilderness area than they would normally, you know, anticipate coming in. And that was one thing that he was hoping that through, like, orientations, that we could encourage people to respect the wilderness. And also many people that come in from, you know, all over the country or all over the world come into, you know, this area because they've read about it, and then they run into groups that are just, you know, out for a lark, not really appreciating the wilderness. And so I think that was one of the main things that he referred to as not being environmentally aware.
It seems to me that Holden, we'd made up of a lot of people from Minnesota and Wisconsin and Nebraska and Iowa, people that are not used to wilderness, come in, have this opportunity to go out, and there's some equipment available, that these people never would be out in that type of condition were it not for Holden. That it is because of Holden that these people have the opportunity to be out in the wilderness. And so that's kind of the reason that sort of thing happens. And I think of people coming to Sky Ranch from Minnesota that have never had a backpack on, you know, to go backpacking. And I would assume there are several people that wind up at Lyman and Holden Lake that have never had a backpack on before. Am I right? I mean, is that
probably
the case?
Gene, did Ken say the other night, or did someone else say, instead of always thinking in terms of Holden and Hart, why don't you go to Dole?
That's one of their one of the educational things that in the orientation that I'm going to be doing in the next couple of weeks, and then the High Coast Christmas Summer is going to be suggesting that there are a lot of, you know, beautiful backcountry areas to go to: Dole Lakes, Mirror Lake, Emerald Park, Deborah Pass, Hilton Pass, and to try to encourage people.
But aren't they also kind of upset that there's now almost a trail up Martin Ridge, and it's not meant to be a real trail? I think it was he who said it, if you start encouraging people to go to Dole, there will be a kind of trail, and then wouldn't they be unhappy with that?
Well, he told me that it would be good for the Forest Service if more people were going to those areas, because that would help trail maintenance, because they don't have people maintaining those trails
there's
not a real trail. And so that would help out a lot, because then there'd be a trail, and that would divert more activity to those places. That's what I'm
Who was it that said that?
Ken.
Because then I'm going to, this is officially for me, but it's for the Forest Service, that, you know, like the trail over the Moore Pass shouldn't be there, that Ernie put in and things like that, they really don't want them there. So, but maybe that's not so, maybe they would rather, maybe they just can't maintain them there.
Well, I think one of the problems that they admit themselves is that they created part of the wilderness problem because they haven't developed any trails outside the wilderness area, so that there really are no alternatives at this point. And so the attempt is being made now to try to encourage some use of other areas. That was one reason why they went along with the suggestion of opening the old railroad trail, because that would provide a nice hike if you get to Donkey Lake. I suppose that it even opens up Mirror Lake and Dole Lakes, you know, to a greater extent. But the whole idea that those are non-wilderness areas and they don't have the restrictions there that they do in the wilderness, so I guess it's maybe not the best situation, but it's better than everybody going into the wilderness.
I think part of it is just that they're really concerned about Lyme and Cloudy and Image Lake and the use and the impact that's there. That's a real fragile alpine area, and it takes a long time to restore that area like that. So.
And one of the indications of change about 5 years ago, the Forest Service said that, like Copper Basin, that if we wanted to maintain that trail, that was okay, but it was no longer on their budget or in their materials as a Forest Service trail, and now they're going to assume responsibility for it again, and because they feel that it's, you know, it's another good trail that has some alternatives for not only us here at the village, but also possibly for a circular trail, then, you know, like from Emerald Park, either over into Dole Lakes or into Copper Basin and then back down. So I think they are starting to face up to the necessity of developing trails outside the wilderness area.
Maybe I could take a bunch of people up the 10-mile basin and show them the ways to put more people would go that way. We had to follow deer paths and all kinds of wildlife paths to get here. There were a few blazes, but nothing maintained.
Well, I know for a fact it was maintained last year, and I was on it last year.
I'm just talking about between here and
Drewgard.
There's none. Yeah.
It cuts in.
You get past the, you know, a couple miles up the 10-mile creek.
Well, there's a small camp right when you come up. Out of the railroad creek valley. If you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
If you go uphill from there, you'll hit the trail and a few hundred feet, you can take it. Or you can stay right in the woods, take the meadow and walk up the meadow. But that trail is a nice trail now. It's too fast for the Woodbury Pass. It's going on forever. But yeah, I wouldn't want to go up that trail. As a matter of fact, the Park Service employee came down that trail last year. And he said it was horrendous. It took him forever to get down into the creek valley and said he'd have to do it again. He had no idea that it was the summit of the trail.
Have you spent some time left at the camp?
Yeah.
It seems like the more communication you do, finding out the Forest Service's, you know, kind of directions, what they would like the direction of hiking to go in this area, you know, the more holding you tune into that, like.
They've got some, like, the Christmas tree in the hike house this summer. I think they have a big orientation and training session planned with them.
Good.
The wilderness boundaries, Klondike and that, there are extent they're that way, and they come kind of loop around and include the Boar Pass and another pass that are over there, but that's as far, and they go back
the wilderness boundary. Like, let's see, I don't know. Yeah, like Copper Basin really isn't in the wilderness. The wilderness boundary kind of follows the top of the ridge between Railroad Creek and Eniac River. And then on this side, part of it follows the top of the ridge, Martin Ridge. So like this side of Martin Ridge is not in the wilderness, but if you go over the ridge, it is. And as Dean was saying that, in my personal opinion, is it's kind of stupid what they're talking about, because what they're saying is that they're making, it's like making Doral Lakes and Martin Ridge and some other places that are not in the wilderness different than a place that is in the wilderness simply because of a boundary line drawn on a map. And it seems perhaps, in a sense, that it's all National Forest Service land should be managed a little more in relation, in correlation with one another. I think the other frustration I have is a hike to Wyman Lake is much, in my opinion, much easier than a hike to Dole Lakes. And so it's a question of what type of hiker is more likely to go to Wyman Lake or the Dole Lakes. Now perhaps if a trail was put into Dole Lakes, it might be another story, but I don't know, there's some difficulty too.
A subtle little thing that I heard coming into several comments tonight, I don't know that I'm entirely comfortable with it, is the distinction between us and the Forest Service that makes it a we and them. And it sounds like we're taking up sides, and I don't know that that's all, I mean, I don't know that that's always valid, because I think that a lot of objectives of the Forest Service are really, should be, the same objectives that we have. And I think, if, you know, when we start thinking about our rights or something like that, it's a little easier to set up that we-they dichotomy. And I'm just uncomfortable if we start doing that.
Well, I didn't mean to present it that way.
No, I'm not.
But,
I mean, I don't mean to be picking on
well,
you.
Well, I didn't
mean
to talk about
it. Yeah. It's been a subtle thing in a number of comments from a bunch of people.
To do that, that's just legal. That's the way it's done. In other words, logging is legal in the National Forest.
This answer is ridiculous.
Well, we really need, I mean, the question I think isn't so much whether we can have logging or not, but probably a question of how much and where, because certainly considering the amount of wood we use and paper we use, we do need logging. We do need forests logging the use of the trees somewhere, so it's a matter of where it should be cut and how much. And that's kind of one of the Forest Service's responsibilities. And often we argue or disagree with what they do, how much they do or how little they do.
And that one touches us here at Holman quite a bit. With, I don't know enough information about the logging here in the village. This is getting off the subject a little bit. But it's something that needs to be talked about too, is our use of wood here. You'd like to think, well, it's kind of ironic, you look around and you see trees everywhere and you think that we could never run out of wood, but isn't the Forest Service a little worried about that? We're starting to take, you know, too much wood?
Yeah, well, it's tied in with our ability to, our very limited ability to get, you know, logs. Like, our limit is about 200 feet off the road just because of our particular equipment, and even if we had other equipment, they probably wouldn't allow us to, you know, like, build roads into the area. So we're talking about a very narrow corridor down the River Creek Valley where we have access to logs. And so far, we've restricted ourselves purposely to dead, in other words, snags, dead timber, both for our sawmill operation and, of course, for our firewood till, you know, that's our restriction, and they have seen over the years a constant increase in our use of wood, and so that they've expressed concern that conservation should be practiced there as well as other areas.
Well, One thing that was brought up on the hike today, I think John mentioned it, talking about, for example, saunas, the wood we use in saunas during the summer, and perhaps, well, either John or Mary mentioned that, like, for example, milk cartons, just stuffed with paper or other things, could be used kind of as starting the sauna fire, and that's, for example, one possible way of conserving wood.
We're filling with sawdust, couldn't you? Mark?
Yeah.
From the mill, sawmill? The bark off those logs will be sawdust for several nights if we can handle it.
I really see a large opportunity for Holden doing a lot of wilderness education with the amount of hiking that goes on here. I can't help comparing the Sky Ranch since I worked there, and it's both the national forest and the national park. We're right on the boundary of Rocky Mountain National Park. Kind of have no qualms about Sky Ranch being there, and I didn't think about it until I started listening to the dialogue, you know, what I'm hearing dialogue going on between the Forest Service and Holden. And Sky Ranch's education program is just amazing. I mean, the average hiker that would be in the national park would not have the strenuous education that we go through. Like, the backpacker, the counselors spend 2 weeks of education beforehand, both in survival and just care and no trace camping and that whole thing. And then having that one individual with six people camping for 5 nights and the education process that goes along in there. And Sky Ranch is very concerned about no trace camping, just for the relationship of allowing to be stayed there. And the impression I got from the Forest Service was kind of, we're glad that Sky Ranch is here because of the educational service it is doing for both the forest and the national park. And what I'm wondering is if Holden, through the hike house, could do much more in that area. Like, I mean, before anyone goes out into on a hiking trip, it is an hour orientation beforehand. I was wondering.
That is being planned. Starting this Sunday, once a week, there'll be an orientation for all staff, new staff, and now staff that are here that haven't to hiking, to no, showing the No Trace Camping film, talking about No Trace Camping.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to be in depth like 2 weeks, but I mean, it'll be about an hour, half an hour, to an hour.
How about guests? Are they orientated at all?
I don't know what the plans are for guests.
One of the problems, Dennis, the six people who come to hike with you are coming to hike.
Right.
Most people who come to Holden are not coming to hike. They're coming for Holden being a center for lay theological discussion and other things. When they're here, the wilderness is very attractive. The hike house is here. They hear of other people who went to Heart Lake. I think we attempt in the orientation and in all Holden stands for to talk about care of the earth. But we get some people who really are not hikers who, very frankly, take a walk into the wilderness, a one-day walk into the wilderness. If they camp, I think if somebody really wants to camp overnight and uses Holden equipment, we then certainly would have the right and the responsibility to talk more about camping. Mm-hmm. But I think...
Is that happening? I mean, people that are, like, renting the camping gear and going out, do they have the...
Well, we have different people run the hike house. Sometimes every month it's a different person who runs the hike house, but we try.
This summer there will be an attempt so that anybody that goes on an overnight will not be forced to, but will be encouraged to see the No Trace film strip.
Yeah. And
really the opportunity that the village has is primarily with the staff, because there's very few guests that go on overnights compared with staff, mm-hmm. so that you know, our, I guess our fault in the past has not been working with staff as much. You know, because they're really the ones that potentially, you know, can do the harm in the wilderness. The guests, I think, you know, very few of them will be out for very long, you know, and most of them that just take the walk in the wilderness during the day, I think that's compatible with the wilderness, and they really don't do any harm. You know, they, I think they're, you know, enjoy it, and they leave no trace. So that's why I think that, you know, like tonight and through the summer, that we can hopefully work more, you know, with the staff and get us thinking about, again, the privilege that we have and what, you know, are we willing to put some limitations on ourselves? I think that's, you know, one of the crucial things that I, you know, maybe, you know, could be discussed a little bit yet. You know, are we really willing to put any restrictions on ourselves, or do we want to discuss it and then say, no, we don't want our freedom, you know, restricted? Do we want the Forest Service to restrict everybody else's freedom in there, but not ours?
I was wondering, like the no trace camping, rather than be an option for people that are going to be camping, if that could be a requirement for anyone that's doing an overnight. For anyone that's been camping, I mean, just a way of renewing the sense and some ideas that might have been forgotten about. And
do you mean seeing the no trace film?
Yeah.
Well, some people would consider this a restriction of freedom, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that we would want to do it as a suggestion so that they can appreciate the wilderness, but not set it as a... I mean, anytime you make a rule like that, well, then you're going to have somebody check it. Mm-hmm.
No, I think he was talking about just seeing the film.
Yeah, I know, but I mean...
How are we going to check it?
So when you're standing at the hike house, have you seen the... Oh, sure, I've seen the film.
Well, I mean,
see, this is where the staff will be in the orientation every Sunday afternoon, you know, supposedly a day after they arrive here, so that's, again, the staff are the ones that use the wilderness to the greatest extent, like overnight, so that they will all supposedly have seen it before they go into the wilderness.
I think the point Wanda brought up before this is pretty important, because it never occurred to me before that going to Lyman Lake and Clutter Pass was a real privilege until maybe the last couple months, and talking to Ken and talking about this whole issue, and I started thinking, this is a wilderness area and it's a privilege to go there, you know, once, let alone, you know, sometimes I think here at Holden we perpetuate the idea that, you know, the more times you get to there, the better, you know, that means you're really getting into the wilderness because you're going there five or six times. And we need to look at that, and maybe there's a, on our collage over in the dining hall, there's a survey taken from National Wildlife and says, do we want to preserve wilderness and the environment? Yeah. Do we want to change our lifestyle? Do it. No, we don't have to change our lifestyles to do it. It was, you know, kind of the overwhelming response, and I think that's a real big question. And we want the wilderness, and we want it to be there left unchanged, but are we willing to make responsible decisions about how we use it and how we make our own decisions about where we're going to go?
Well, I'd like to speak to the last, both Dennis and Werner's comment, because I think we can at Holden, without taking away people's freedom, make people much more conscious of, like what you just learned. In the winter, there are people who will determine on the basis of your past experience which hikes, they'll make judgments on who can go on a hike. I think we have the right to make some evaluation of whether or not people who are Holden guests are ready to go into the wilderness. If that includes, have you seen the film strip? If that includes limiting the number of people who go? If that includes a brief conversation in the hike house about wilderness or the privilege of going there? I don't think that's taking away people's freedom. I mean, I think we could find a way. Most people who have never hiked and don't have any skills will be delighted that you offer a session, including a film. I would. A film strip with some information to make the thing more enjoyable. I mean, that's another way to say it. Instead of
you have to pass this test before you can go, is we have some information that will give you more competence and let you enjoy your trip more. It's just a different way of saying the same thing. But if they don't have any skills, I think they'd appreciate a hike house who gave them the information they needed in order to feel skilled enough to do it. I think we can stress some of those things. Probably take some talking through. And yes, there might still be some misuse, but at least we have attempted to give an attitude and an attitude, and we show evidence of our care and concern about the wilderness area. We do that when youth groups come in and talk about the switchbacks and all that kind of thing.
Not just youth groups, every orientation in the summer, I spend about just 5 minutes talking about campfires, foliage, switchbacks, number of people that are allowed to go, what wilderness survival means, you know, will the wilderness survive you? How many people go through, why it's important, but it's, you know, it's not an in-depth thing, but I think
another sort of criteria that can be used is even to ask people when they want to go on a hike, you know, are you going into the wilderness because you really want to go into the wilderness, or are you trying to get away from Holden? If you're going to get away from Holden, then, you know, there are a lot of other places to go rather than go into the wilderness and destroy somebody else's experience of wilderness. If they're really wanting to go into the wilderness for the sake of enjoying the wilderness, then I think that's even the attitude of the person why they want to go in, you know.
Dave and I went together to Copper Basin. I think without any deception at all, I would tell somebody, unless they wanted to fish or unless they had a real thing about seeing lakes, this is a nicer hike. Mm-hmm. You'll see fewer people on this one than you will on the so-called wilderness. I mean, there's just lots of, I think, there's one of the things maybe we do this summer is to get away from the attitude that you haven't really done it unless you've seen a few things. It's like going to D.C. and you haven't seen it unless you saw them print money or some such thing. It just plus the fact that we keep, unless you do a little bit more than last year's staff, mm-hmm. unless you get to Seattle or Martin's Ridge, you haven't been to Holden. Part of it may be the attitude we have. They did contract with somebody to do railroad, to do the Domke Lake Trail. Forest Service just hired somebody that's working with Mark in Leavenworth. He and his wife are going to do it.
Maintain it?
I thought it was probably to build part of it.
Well, none of the bridges are in, which really means that it's not usable until like August when the runoff is over. So.
I don't know what he's going to be doing then.
Jean, are there restrictions to the the Forest Service restrict people like going to Image once, or
no?
They don't have any say.
The only thing that's required is you need to get a wilderness permit, but that's more for counting who goes where rather than restriction.
Did you say it was our numbers, not theirs? 12 to Holden and 24 total on the
Their line? Restriction is a group size of 12.
For overnight.
For an overnight group, right. That's the only restrictions at all. We have voluntarily imposed restrictions that we will not send more than 12 people a day to Holden Lake. And on the Heart Lake Trail, Lyman Lake Trail, including Heart Lake and Lyman users, both, we won't send more than 24 people a day. That's a voluntary thing that the Forest Service is really thankful for.
Yeah, that's strictly a guideline, though, too, because at least I don't think we can enforce that even, you know, ourselves to the mm-hmm. extent where we can keep somebody, you know, that's here for the last day, they haven't had a chance, or they're only here for 3 days.
You mean if they don't sign out?
Well, no, I mean if they sign out even, I think we have to be a little bit flexible on that. And, you know, some days there may be 30 people on the trail. But what the guideline does for us is that we can say, well, if you're going to be here 3 more days, we do have 24 out on the trail now. Can you wait, you know, until Thursday, you know? if they're not going to be here another day and haven't had a chance to get out on it, well, then I really don't think that we can refuse them access to the wilderness.
I remember last summer overhearing several people that were refused access.
Yeah, well, I don't think we should do
and
that.
And they were completely understanding.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they didn't have another chance, and that was all right with them. They understood why.
Sometimes those people end up at Copper Basin
sure,
there
yeah.
and have a real good time.
Sure.
Well, I think, you know, the other options can be explored, but then if they still, you know, say that this is our last day and we'd like to go into the wilderness, I don't think we can keep going.
I just get nervous sometimes when we focus too strongly on rights. I just think that's what's led to a lot of the problems already, that so many people have had their own little areas of rights that they've held sacred, you know, and it's the mining companies have the right up until 1984 to go prospecting, and, you know, it's perfectly legal. I remember last summer talking to a person who is a private pilot and had flown his plane over the village several times, and I personally found it kind of annoying. He was up at the village afterwards, and I spoke to him about it. And he said, well, he was so many feet above the village and it was legal. And I just get tired of when that's our basis for doing things. It's my right to be able to do at least this much. And I just think that's gotten us into a lot of problems.